Ew. Sparks. Diet Pepsi is warm. And what is this in my candy dish? This is candy. Can anyone in this place spill Adderall? I think you recognize that music. That's the theme from Monk by the irrepressible Randy Newman. And, you know, I used to watch that show. A lot of us are, we have a few minutes to binge watch now, and I was pulling all that up. I remember the relationship, not only the fact that I'm a little bit OCD. You know, Monk was the original hand washer, but the relationship between him and his therapist, played by Stanley Kimmel, and then Hector Hector Elizondo. Thank you. I was watching that last night, and I thought maybe you'd want to meet a real life psychotherapist. And here he is, Mr. Randy Cantor, joining us. Randy, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, Gary. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm going to try to turn you up a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So listen, you and I have known each other a long time, and I just introduced you as a real-life psychotherapist. I'm almost sure that I asked you to hang out on the radio with me before, and I don't think you ever did that. Why now?
Why now?
Yeah.
I think it's important now to be able to reach out to people during this very difficult time. I'm older now, and I have more experience, so I feel more comfortable being in the room.
You know, I was looking here. I just made some notes. Again, I'm the college dropout on the show here, but there's a thing called Life Review that I read about that older people like me, look back. And for example, I've had a picture of me and Bob Marley on the wall forever. We framed it yesterday. So my question is that sense of Life Review, are people sort of thinking a little more consistently about what they've done, even if you're not so old? What about that?
Yeah, I think during this kind of time, you definitely get much more reflective about yourself and your life, your family, where you come from, because we're trying to understand what the hell is going on.
And how are we doing so far?
That's a funny question. I think we're doing less than 50%, but because the numbers keep on growing, and so I think it's a good thing to reflect a little bit. And what I recommend to people, a lot of my clients, is to journal about what has gone on in the past, which triggers ideas and thoughts about the present. I think it's much more important to stay in the present than to go back in the past. But the past can teach us a few things. And so reflection is quite important.
You know, I was going to kind of split my question into two groups, people that are practicing psychotherapists. You know, real quick, Randy, I'm going to give some background. Somebody asked me about that. A psychiatrist is an MD. This is all a question mark thing. And a psychiatrist is an MD who studies diseases of the mind. Sigmund Freud was a psychiatrist, I think. Then a psychologist studies behavior. And then a psychotherapist, I think, is technically a psychologist. But to split that, before we get in, I want to ask about what specifically you do.
Sure.
But deal that out for us. So you're and we call all of you a shrink. And I mean that in the nicest way. So what about all that?
Well, first of all, a psychiatrist is an MD and can prescribe medication. And so that's what distinguishes a psychiatrist from a psychologist, and I am a social worker.
Technically, an LCSW, right, is after your name?
Right, a licensed clinical social worker in the state of Illinois. Different states have different letters behind the name, but usually it's a LCSW. You get a national nomenclature, ACSW, after you take a test and you've spent so many years practicing. So really, it's an ACSW, which is an accredited certified social worker, but LCSW in the state of Illinois. Now, getting back to your question, a psychologist in the state of Illinois can now prescribe psychotropic meds.
Can you hear?
But what a psychologist does psychological testing. That's what distinguishes their profession, is that the psychologists do psychological testing. And social workers do the bulk of psychotherapy in America. Not to say that psychiatrists and psychologists don't do psychotherapy, but LCSWs are doing the bulk of psychotherapy.
We're talking to Randy Kanner, who is a psychotherapist and an Illinois shrink and an old friend of mine. I want to ask two questions here. I know that you're currently practicing. You have patients who should be called clients, people that you know, people that you've been talking to. And then I'm wondering if people who know you or know about you, or I guess there's a whole bunch of people out there that maybe thought, gee whiz, I should get into therapy, or they used to be, or they thought about that. So I'm saying there are people that are currently seeing someone, and then people for a lot of different reasons woke up the last couple of weeks and say, maybe I need to get some help. Address those two groups, could you?
Sure. Well, define them again. What's the first group?
Well, I want to know about people that are currently seeing someone, your clients, you know, that kind of group, and then a group of people who are not in therapy right now are suddenly wondering if that's not such a good idea, not a bad idea.
Yeah, people who have been in therapy for a while started therapy you start therapy because you're really in some kind of psychic pain, psychic distress. You're hurting. You haven't figured out a way to be able to handle it on your own. And psychotherapists have, obviously, a base of knowledge by which they're able to help people. So the clients that I've been seeing for a while continue because what they're doing is that they're refining their ability to cope. Today, with what's going on, and it's triggered a sudden rush of depression and anxiety. And so those people that are stuck at home, feeling depressed, feeling anxious, and are trying things, healthy things to get themselves better, but it's not working, will call a psychotherapist, and just the process of talking, just the process of reaching out, that first step is helpful to people.
You know, you said a sudden rush, and I'm sure that's true, and one would expect that to happen. But how do you know that to be the case, based on people calling you or talking to other therapists that suddenly? We're not surprised by that, but I'm guessing about a week ago, something changed. Is that about right?
Yeah, I would say a week ago something changed, and yes. I have gotten an increase in calls, and colleagues that I've talked to have gotten an increase in calls. There are also a lot of nonprofits that have websites that people go to and are able to hook up with therapists as well. In the city of Chicago, there are mental health clinics that people can call and will be connected to a psychotherapist. And today, since people aren't leaving their homes, the way psychotherapy is being conducted is through the telephone, called telehealth. And that's done sometimes by just talking as we are. It's done if you have iPhones with FaceTime, Skype. Zoom has become popular in terms of people meeting. Google Chat. There's all sorts of different ways to be reached by a therapist. So you can have some face-to-face contact. What's missing today, since we're isolated, is that kind of face-to-face contact that people need.
My my daughter, Shorty, whom you know, and is following in your footsteps, so to speak, she asked me to ask you about that. That telehealth, is that the line?
Telehealth.
All right. Let me ask you a question, and I'm thinking probably the answer to this is yes, I hope so. Are people who are in therapy or have been doing, people who already had a relationship with Randy Cantor or some one of your colleagues, you think they're better suited now to handle what's going on with the coronavirus than the average bear? What about it?
Well, I would hope so. So, yes, I think the answer is yes. I think they are, again, they have hopefully some tools that they have learned from their therapist that will help them cope with the anxiety, as opposed to a person who has never talked to a therapist, who has never really thought about therapy and doesn't have some of the recommended tools to cope with the depression and anxiety, which is being thrust upon us today.
You know, I tell you what we're going to do. I'm not going to put it on you, but a link that we all agree on, and I'll put it up on the website, and that's bleat.network, for someone looking for the services that you just talked about that doesn't know how to do that. Let me just shuffle paper, Randy. Do you mind? You know what? A lot of us have been doing, drop the needle, the flu epidemic of 1918 and, the plagues and locusts of the past. Do you and your colleagues get together and say, let's look at what was happening, or to what extent do you all learn from other, and there haven't been that many of them, but other worldwide things like this, and how do we arm ourselves by studying that in the past? Does that come up with you and your colleagues?
Yes, it does. And many therapists go through what is called trauma training. Learning how to help people who have been through a trauma. For me, it was 9/11. When 9/11 happened and a lot of people were calling, I felt I had to learn a little bit more about how to help people in trauma. And so there are trauma specialists. There are, you can go to websites and you can find people who are just experts in trauma. And so I took a couple of workshops on trauma and learned some techniques at that time, back when 9/11 happened, that I continue to use today.
I'm going to ask you about that. You and I know each other pretty well. I lived in New York. Both of my daughters were born in New York. Their mother and I were often having a drink at a place called Windows on the World, which is on top of the World Trade Center. So, trauma with a capital T. I want to ask you what you learned in your trauma workshops.
Well, again, the key is to get people to learn how to cope better. You're not going to get rid of the depression and the anxiety. It's not going to, just by talking to a therapist, all of a sudden disappear. So it's really learning how to cope better. And what's important is the idea of mindfulness. Mindfulness is a very popular concept now and popular theory. And basically, it involves three or four ideas. The first is that you acknowledge the anxiety. Don't pretend it's not there, and the depression. Don't pretend that it doesn't exist. Make sure that you are able to acknowledge it and pay attention to where it is in your body. What is it doing to your body? Is it causing body pains? Is it causing you to want to eat more, sleep less, those sort of things? So acknowledge what the depression and the anxiety is doing.
Now, we're talking about mindfulness, and sometimes it's hard to hear that word. It's M-I-N-D-F-U, whatever that is.
N-E-S-S. And the father of mindfulness is a psychiatrist called John Kabat-Zinn.
Ah, yeah.
C-I-N-N.
Yeah, you and I talked about that. You know, go ahead, spell that. Well, people got nothing to do. We're all locked down. I'm kidding, but spell that name. That was a name that you recommended to me. Go ahead.
Right. John Kabat-Zinn, Z-I-N-N. And he has a website that's chock full of good ideas. He writes well, easy to read. And I would recommend it for all your listeners.
All right, John Kabat-Zinn, Z-I-N-N. We'll put that link up. So mindfulness, number one, pay attention to what's going on and don't pretend that that's not in place. I'm going to jump around. I ask you to answer this, and I'm writing this down. One thing that occurs to me, Randy, somebody's living with somebody that, you know, oh, I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm fine. No, I know. I'm okay. I'm drinking a little more, and I'm eating a little more, but you know what I mean. What about that? That's pretty scary. That's pretty scary. That's the person that says, do I call on my husband or my wife or my girlfriend or my boyfriend? Somebody needs that. And I think right now, you know, in general, Randy, I think you know that there are suicide lines. And I would call, gee whiz, you know, my wife's depressed. I don't know what to do. But suddenly a million people are doing that versus 10 or 100. You know what I'm getting at?
Uh-huh.
Give that person some advice who's worried about the spouse.
Sure. It sometimes is effective to call a psychotherapist and say, yes, my spouse or my loved one is concerned about that. I'm concerned about them. They're showing these signs. They're talking about wanting to hurt themselves. I think that could help because maybe you can get some useful ideas. But obviously, what's most important is to find a way to get that person to reach out for help themselves. If it doesn't happen, then you're only going to be 50% effective.
Now,
to be 100% effective, you've got to get the person to reach out for themselves.
All right, now let's ratchet it back. Someone, no particular depression or anxiety, but we're just concerned, right? We're just a little bit off. And I guess this goes back to a coping mechanism or... just kind of doing. You talk about journaling, and Randy, there are a lot of people who do, and a lot of people who don't. What about that? Just little steps, little changes. Yeah.
Yes. Again, it's not going to happen all at once. It's not going to disappear. So you take the small steps. Acknowledge it. Don't get distracted by it. Distraction. Exercise. Listen to music. Find something humorous, distract the distraction. And number three is be grateful. Be grateful for every day that you're alive, even though we're stuck at home. We have to practice gratitude. And then number four is self-compassion and compassion to others. And if you can use those four steps, and you don't have to do them 1, 2, 3, 4, you could start with being compassionate, and then you can, you know, go, oh man, this anxiety is killing me. So you don't have to do them in any particular steps, but you want to practice those four concepts.
You know, you and I have talked, and I think sometimes people like you, wise people like you, have simply said to me, Gary, why don't you get off your own back? And I think that right now there's so much weight on everyone. We're worried about our family and our jobs and our heads, and it's hard to get off your own back. But I think that's what number four is.
Right. And number two, distract the distraction. Know that you're feeling it, and then find something to do that gets you out of that place where you're depressed and anxious. And again, exercise is the best stress release known to man.
And I might add, that's a tricky one right now. I can't swim. That's my thing. People can in Illinois now. They can walk down the, you know, the street. But I don't know. Somebody I know recently lives in an apartment building. They closed the gym, and he's now doing the flights of stairs down, I don't know, 10 or 20 stories.
That's effective. There are hundreds of videos, exercise videos online or that you can get, with your local TV carrier.
And I do not host any of them.
You don't host any of them.
Although if I had the Adidas,
that I'd like to see.
If I had the Adidas, where I would. We're going to wrap up, Randy Cantor. I'm going to insist that you come back and talk. I hope again. I wrote down here, Randy. Humor. I wrote a song overnight, and the lyric is. I remember the look on your beautiful face when the governor said, let's shelter in place.
Very good.
We're doing our best here. Listen.
Keep it up. Keep it up.
Yeah. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Seems to care.
Will I do it? Who's in charge here? There's a jungle out there. Poison in the very air we breathe. You know what's in the water that you drink? Well, I do. It's amazing. People think I'm crazy, 'cause I worry all the time.